In recent years, a thirst for more responsible energy policy has sparked campaigns for municipal utilities in several U.S. cities. Boulder and Minneapolis are some of the highest profile examples, but a battle underway in Santa Fe, which has enormous renewable energy resources, continues to pick up momentum. Marielle Nanasi is at the center of that effort. She runs New Energy Economy, a local advocacy group that has taken its fight against a monopoly utility to the state Supreme Court. She spoke with John Farrell about what's at stake in Santa Fe and the win-win policy plan that could solve its energy problems. This is Local Energy Rules, a podcast sharing powerful stories about local renewable energy.
So I think a little context is important for folks here in terms of what's happening in Santa Fe and in New Mexico around clean energy. I think the first thing would be that PNM, Public Service Company of New Mexico, is their big monopoly utility company. And even though you guys are basically ground zero for the best solar resource in the country, my understanding is they don't have much plan to use a lot of solar in terms of serving the electricity needs of other Santa Fe or are there other New Mexico customers. Is that true?
Yeah, that's correct. PNM has 80% coal and nuclear on their system and only 3% solar. And a little over one of those 3%, PNM includes all the rooftop solar and individual businesses that produce their own solar. So PNM is taking credit for that as well. And PNM has about 7% wind. So they're far behind regulated utilities across the nation. And it's true what you say. It's especially concerning given the abundance of solar and wind potential we have here.
And it's funny that you mentioned that they take credit for what their customers are doing around rooftop solar, because as I understand it, last year they were proposing to change the way that folks pay for energy and put more of the bill into a fixed energy charge rather than a charge based on how much they use, which would have actually made it harder to make money or to save money, I should say, on your electric bill by going solar.
That's exactly right. They also had a solar access fee proposed in a rate case, and we won a motion to dismiss against PNM, and they refiled their rate case, which is currently pending, and literally it could be today that the hearing examiner's recommended decision will come out, and they want to increase their fixed fee, but there was so much pushback. Solar access fee that they didn't refile that in this new rate case. But they're proposing in this rate case to increase the fixed charge from $5 to $13 and something cents, I forget exactly, but it's 163% increase in the fixed charge. And so you're right, that is a disincentive for solar people who put solar on their house.
I should add, just as a little plug, we did an interview with Rick Gilliam from Vote Solar a few weeks ago on that issue of fixed charges. So for folks who are interested in learning more about why that is a particularly bad and perverse policy, I would suggest that interview. So let me pivot a little bit here. You know, we've got a utility company that's not really doing a great job of supplying renewables despite an abundant and inexpensive resource. And so folks in Santa Fe have been looking at alternatives. You know, you've been battling with them at the Public Regulatory Commission. But in 2012, there was a study done, and I think you had something to do with, on the benefits of forming a municipal utility, of having Santa Fe take over energy services for folks that live there. And if I recall correctly, it not only said that you could do more renewables, but that you could do it at a lower cost than the incumbent utility. Tell me more about that study.
That's absolutely true. You know, one of the things that just, I don't know how much your listeners know, but in a situation where there's a regulated monopoly, the regulators who are supposed to be regulating on our behalf, we have found, and I think that it's pretty common across the country, is that oftentimes the monopoly is actually regulating the regulators. And they're not really regulating on our behalf. And so what that means is, when they come in and they ask for stranded assets or they ask to reinvest in their coal and nuclear, they tend to shave off on the price, you know, $10 million here, $10 million there, but they don't really shift the energy portfolio that's aligned with the preference of the people. And what we did was we did a couple things. One is we did some polling to actually find out because, you know, we have our own gut feelings, and I'm not a big polling person, but we did a really honest poll. And what we did was we did it based on the census. We had Spanish-speaking pollsters, and we asked people about what their preference is. And what we found out exceeded what we thought, which was that 89% of the people want solar. And what was really amazing about it is it cut across party, it cut across ethnicity, it cut across age, and we found that single parents with children was the single greatest demographic that really wanted solar. And that's kind of an interesting thing to think about. Like, basically, hey, we need a partner for a hopeful world for our kid. That's my interpretation of that. And so the reason why we are investigating alternatives to this current institutionalized system that really has not served the needs of the people is because it's not aligned with our values. And it's not aligned with what we know we have to do, both in terms of the environment and climate, health, but also the economy. And that the sort of backwards 50s thinking of let's invest in a big centralized coal plant far away from the load centers and just run wires, which also has the negative impact of people not being conscious about where their energy comes from and also where it's physically located, is in our case is in on Navajo Nation or adjacent to Navajo Nation, and therefore the people who suffer the most are living literally under the toxic shadow of these coal plants are Native people. And so there's a whole environmental racism aspect to our energy policy as well. We have sustainability goals, we have carbon neutrality goals, but there's no way that we could meet them when we have this monopoly that's, as I said to you before, 60% coal and 20% nuclear. And so we want to be putting solar on our rooftops, and we have a lot of land. We're blessed with a lot of land. And so to the extent that we can't meet our needs through rooftop solar, we could put it out on the land that we have. But we want to go in that order, by the way. That's another preference of people, to use the current flat roofs that we have or parking lots instead of creating, you know, more intrusions onto land. So we're looking at two things. One is municipalization, which is, first of all, just creating the authority within the city of Santa Fe to become a municipal utility. And the things that we could start with is any new load. I like to call them islands of competence. What there would be is, let's say there's a new housing development that goes in. Well, instead of PNM providing that electricity, the city of Santa Fe would say that they could. And they could do it in one of three ways. One is they could just put out a request for a proposal, an RFP, like they do on cleaning services in the convention center or something, and say, look, we want 50% or 75% or 100% renewable energy, and you have to have, and I'm just making this up, you know, 50% local employment. They could put out an RFP and see who applies, and PNM could apply for that as well. And then that enclave, that new housing development, could be supplied with 100% renewable energy, or they could provide it themselves. So Santa Fe could literally go into the business of putting solar on every house that's built there and requiring the developer to do that as part of, like, everything else you have to put in a house. Like, you have to put in a boiler, like you have to put in a refrigerator, you'd have to put in solar panels. And then the city of Santa Fe could either purchase power for times when the solar isn't providing energy, or provide it in another way, whether it's wind turbines or a backup generator or the possibility of battery storage. So those are the possibilities, or a mixture. And so those are the different possibilities that we're looking at. Why I want to start with islands of competence is because, unfortunately, we're at a time where there's such fear of government competence and reluctance to trust government. And so what we want to first establish, and this would be like a step, is to show that it's possible and expose the vision of what's possible. Once that, let's say, housing development, as I've chosen, but it could be anything. It could be the newest, you know, industrial park. It could be whatever it would be. We're talking to the mayor about making the city of Santa Fe's municipal airport completely solar and having that be so that when people arrive, they realize that this airport is being run on solar, which would be really cool, too. So we're thinking about actual examples of competence. And when those bills are cheaper than PNMs, which we believe is absolutely possible, because I just will say that PNM's rates have risen since 2008, over 50% for average residential customers. There's a rate case that's pending right now, and they said already that there's going to be another rate case that they're going to file before the end of 2016. So their coal and nuclear legacy investments continue to cost ratepayers more and more and more money. And really why is because basically if you had a choice between brand new solar and wind or 40 and 50 year old nuclear and coal, it's a no-brainer just from the top without even knowing anything and without even comparing all the risks associated with them, because old things break. And so those are going to cost more money. And then if you add pollution controls and other kinds of regulatory risks and decommissioning risks and liabilities associated with it, you're talking about a lot of money. And that's what PNM is so desperately afraid of, is for shareholders to get stuck with these stranded assets that have huge associated risk and liabilities. And that's why they keep on reinvesting in that rather than changing to solar and wind. And then the second option that we're also pursuing at the same time as municipalization is something called community choice aggregation. Community choice aggregation has been now adopted in a number of states in the United States. And what that means is instead of it just being the city of Santa Fe municipalizing, it essentially allows each municipality, whether it's a city or a town or a conglomeration of municipalities, to aggregate their demand and say, we want to choose our energy because we think that we can get it cheaper and better for all the things, jobs and health and environment, than what the utility can provide. And what's so interesting is that corporations are already figuring this out. And I don't know if some of your listeners have realized, but like in Nevada, MGM Resorts and another casino, it's called Wynn Resorts, they are paying to leave Nevada Energy, paying to leave the utility, and still they believe that it will be cheaper for them to procure solar energy, either somewhat by putting solar on their buildings themselves and or purchasing through a PPA, it's called a power purchase agreement, from a solar provider or a combination. And so we're seeing data centers, Google and Facebook and casinos, but Kaiser Permanente and like these big corporations are saying, you know what, actually, we don't really want the energy from the local utility. We want to procure it ourselves. And see, they have enough of clout to do that. And so what we're trying to do is exercise that same kind of clout, not just in terms of corporations, but for the people.
In the case of community choice aggregation, if I'm not mistaken, you would need to change state law before you'd be able to do that, right?
Yes, that's true. And that has been done. So this is clearly a movement whose time has come because people are frustrated by the lack of change.
I really appreciate that you've kind of outlined, I think, kind of two clear paths for this work at the local level, although, of course, community choice aggregation will require some state change. I'd love for you to talk a little bit, too, about some of the other ways you're fighting. You just finished filing a brief, I believe it was at the New Mexico Supreme Court, over these issues. Tell me a little bit about what was involved in that fight, and then also some of the work that you've had to do at the Public Regulatory Commission in order to carry this fight forward that hasn't been at the local level.
While we are pursuing this other path, we still continue to oppose PNM in the regulatory body and have made changes. We've saved ratepayers literally hundreds of millions of dollars, but that is not our purpose. Our purpose is to actually change the energy portfolio mix. And so in 2012, the EPA told PNM, you have one of the dirtiest coal plants in the entire nation, 18th out of 500 and something, and your plant is spewing such toxic waste that it is causing the skies to be hazy. And Santa Fe, if people have come here, it's some of the most beautiful air in the entire country. So tourism is a very big deal to New Mexicans. And what EPA said was, you are blurring the skies. This is a visibility. That was actually the legal hook under the Clean Air Act. You are obscuring the visibility as far away as the Grand Canyon and Utah. So, of course, in real life, in the air, there are no borders. So this plant was causing haze in Colorado and Utah and Arizona and, of course, in New Mexico. So when that happened, EPA only has certain tools in their toolboxes, and they said, okay, you have to put on pollution controls. And we helped get that rule passed. But the problem is that we didn't really want that rule, because that would have extended the life of the plant, and also that would have meant paying a lot of money for pollution controls when we wanted it to be shut down. And in fact, we agreed that they would shut down two of the four units at the San Juan plant, which was a really, it was like a great moment in my life. But the next day, I had to experience this intense grief. And that was that PNM said, well, we're going to replace that power with buying more coal and more nuclear. And the more coal came from the same plant, but California Utilities, who also are part owners in that plant, decided to leave and said, this is a great moment for us to escape from this huge liability. If people know that, there's a phrase that was coined in the 2008 housing meltdown called toxic assets. And that was when you had a mortgage that was more expensive than the worth of your home. Well, that's the same thing here. PNM actually bought the assets from California for $0. So wouldn't that raise a red flag? And unfortunately, it didn't with the PRC, and they rubber-stamped PNM's purchase of more coal shares at San Juan over New Energy Economy's objection. And so New Energy Economy appealed that decision, and last Friday, we filed our opening brief against the New Mexico Public Regulation Commission. So it was New Energy Economy versus the New Mexico Public Regulation Commission for their approval of PNM's purchase of more coal and more nuclear to replace the lost capacity that they had in these two units that are going to be shut down by the end of 2017. What we basically argued was that the PRC did not approve of PNM's plan with substantial evidence, which is what the legal standard is. We said that there is other alternatives, but PNM refused to look at them on a consistent and comparable basis. So just like we were talking about before, would you want more coal and nuclear, or would you want brand new shiny wind turbines and solar panels that are often guaranteed for 25 years? And you know the cost up front, because there's very little maintenance costs, and use no water and create jobs, et cetera, et cetera, and without the risks and liabilities, without the environmental regulatory risk, a whole bunch of things. And so we said, if you had done an honest assessment of these alternative resources, then you would have picked solar and wind. And instead, you picked your own, out of all the possibilities out there, you picked your own coal and your own nuclear to basically, as I said before, shift the risk, the financial risk, from shareholders to ratepayers.
And let me dive into that for a second, because people might not understand this. So when you build a power plant, you have the owner of the plant that paid for it to be built, but then you have folks who will contract to buy the power from it. And if I understand correctly, what essentially happened here is you say, you take half the power plant, this San Juan coal power plant, and you were going to shut it down. And the other half, you had a bunch of California utilities who had agreed to buy power from it, who said, you know what, this is a great time to get out of it. So now you have PNM owning a power plant where half's going to get shut down, and the other half no longer has a buyer. And they say, hey, we have all these captive ratepayers. Why don't we make them pay for the electricity from this thing so we don't have to take the loss as shareholders?
Perfect.
Did that sum it up?
That summed it up perfectly. You got it.
Okay.
That's exactly right. This is one of the pitfalls of capitalism, which is that we look at the next quarter. And so it's my belief, the executives at PNM, when it comes time for decommissioning, which, you know, some, I don't know if people are following it, but like one of the nuclear plants that's half the size of the nuclear plant that PNM is involved in Arizona, is in San Onofre. I think they're talking about a $5 billion 40-year decommissioning. Well, it's kind of Orwellian, because we have no idea what to do with the waste, and they don't know what they're going to do and how they're going to clean it up. So that $5 billion is a conservative estimate. And so what the executives at PNM, I believe that one of the real purposes, and I didn't know this when I first got into the case. In the beginning, I just thought, hey, why don't we just have solar and wind? And then I found out why. And the reason is because this crop of executives are thinking, look, we don't want to deal with decommissioning, so let's just keep it open a little bit longer, and the next crop of executives will be there, and then they can deal with decommissioning and have to go in front of the PRC and say, hey, how are we going to pay for this? Shareholders don't want to do that. Let's make the public. In California, I think it was Southern California, Edison went in front of their PUC, Public Utility Commission, and said, oh, our idea is that shareholders will pay a quarter and ratepayers will pay three quarters. Isn't that great? And even the PUC there said, I don't think so. Maybe we should flip that. So that's what's being discussed right now. Sure. In California, and that's what's coming up in a lot of places in the country, which is right. As these plants close, coal plants, nuclear plants, and they're closing because they can't compete economically against solar, wind, and gas.
It reminds me a little bit of publicly financed football yeah. stadiums. You know, the team is always really excited to announce they'll pay for 10% of it, and the taxpayers only have to
yeah.
hold the
bag. And do they get 90. The profit from all the sales? No. Do you know what I mean? Exactly. And yeah. so that's what's coming up. That is going to be something that's going to be being fought out in public regulation commissions all over the country right now, which is how to deal with the decommissioning, how to deal with the stranded assets. We want to defect from the utility because they've managed this so poorly and have failed to sort of see what's going on and to plan. I know it's the P word, we call it. To plan into the future, right? And to assess what's happening in these energy markets. And, you know, we have these things, and maybe you have it where you are. It's called integrated resource plans. But up until now, they've basically been window dressing, and there hasn't been any there as to what that is. It's supposed to be a robust stakeholder engagement process where you see what you know, what people want, what are the preferences of consumers, and then also what's available. PNM holds these meetings, but then they disregard all what people want. And that is one of the issues on appeal as well, which is, hey, the legislature and the regulatory body has designed this IRP process, the integrated resource planning process. That's one of the questions that we have on appeal in the Supreme Court. Is this just a academic exercise, or is there really something to it, and then it must be followed? And that's really goes to the heart of this issue around substantial evidence. And we said, look, you can't have these rules and then ignore them. They literally waived them. PNM and the other signatories to the agreement waived commission rules in order to effectuate the settlement for more coal and nuclear. So we're saying that in and of itself is a problem. Like, you can't have rules that are supposed to be ratepayer protections and safeguards
right.
and then just dismiss them. And that in and of itself is an affront to the idea of why regulatory bodies exist, right? They're literally there to protect the public, but then PNM just waives those rules and the PRC says, okay, so that's the essence of our appeal.
So coming back to the, you know, as you put, I think just a minute or two ago here about this notion of defecting from the utility, you know, you've got this situation where you have a monopoly utility, you've got what some of the wonky folks sometimes call regulatory capture, where, as you put it, the regulators are being regulated by the utility instead of the reverse. And I think you have some pretty compelling evidence of that. Tell me more about, you know, you've got these couple of different ideas for how this could happen in Santa Fe. You have sort of the notion that, you know, if community choice aggregation, which I think is a little bit more of a lift in terms of getting something through your state legislature, but you also have this, I like the way that you talked about islands of competence strategy, where you could have a municipal utility that sort of just takes over new energy consumption, new load. What are some of the next steps for Santa Fe, for new energy economy and for this fight in Santa Fe? And do you think other cities are likely to follow in those footsteps?
I think that, you know, one of the things I just should tell people, the energy companies are the wealthiest companies on the planet, and they have controlled our democracy. And that's one of the things that I think has been such an affront. And we see that in Congress. Why is there no climate legislation, for instance? And so you can see it from afar there. But in a lot of local whether it's a city or a county or in our state, there have been laws that the PNMs of the world have written to make it extremely difficult to defect. Those are constantly things that we have to overcome and face. And so I just want to say that, unfortunately, it's a complex thing, but it's really about political will and about organizing the people. What is very exciting is that the push for municipalization, at least in Santa Fe, where people have really understood, I think one of the greatest contributions that new energy economy has really given to people in Santa Fe, but also in the state, is to try to be a translator of this wonky stuff that happens in the PRC and explain why this matters so much. Santa Fe has like all these great resolutions passed about wanting to be carbon neutral in 2040, but there's no way we can be that way while we are getting our energy from coal, for instance. So how do we separate ourselves and begin to transition? Well, it's a little bit more complicated, but at the same time, it's really about building political will and removing the social license of these energy companies that are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. It's exciting. It's very exciting because people feel like we want to literally take our power back. And so we are going to be initiating a resolution an ordinance in the city of Santa Fe government, but we are building a network statewide to explain what community choice energy is all about, which is, in essence, municipalization on a statewide basis. Mm-hmm. We are also excited about the prospects of a new governor in 2018, and I think that because we have work to expose PNM and their shenanigans, there are more people who are open to this idea. And, you know, it's kind of un-American to have monopolies. And so while some people could make the argument that that was a positive thing in 1950 to have, I mean, we didn't really know better. We have centralized energy productions and then wires coming sometimes 300 miles to people's homes. Well, this is a totally different model. This is decentralized energy and much more control and therefore also much more economic, local energy and sustainability. And that has really profound impact for the local economy. And so the money isn't going to executives who make $600,000 or $3 million a year and then shipping the profit to shareholders on Wall Street. No, it's recirculating and being repurposed into our community. And that's one of the benefits. So it's a long haul, but it's an exciting proposition to create the energy future that we want.
That was Marion Nanasi, Executive Director at New Energy Economy, speaking with John Farrell, ILSR's Director of Energy Democracy, about the push for municipalization in Santa Fe. Learn more about Mariel's work at newenergyeconomy.org. Head over to ILSR.org to learn more about municipalization and to find more Local Energy Rules podcasts. Until next time, keep your energy local, and thanks for listening.